Okay.
Yeah, fine. Okay. I want to continue. We're not going to do the entire perek, so we'll either finish today or tomorrow, today or Sunday, or Monday actually. Sunday, again, we'll be doing Choshen Mishpat, starting Choshen Mishpat. I will send you Mikoros. You have a couple of options on how to go about it. One option you'll have is to simply read through the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch on Simen Aleph in Choshen Mishpat. I'll send you that in the email. I'll also send just a small number of Gemaras that you may find, if you have the time to go through, are probably worth going through, because that's really sort of just the background for this. So we'll finish, God willing, either today or Monday, finish the parts that we're going to do. We're going to do probably just till the Eden Zomerman part, because that really deals with Cheskas Karkos. All right, so let's pick up where we left off yesterday, Mishnah Beis. Can I, Ben?
Sure.
Does anybody recognize this formulation, by the way? To recognize it, you need to have a little bit of Bekias in Mishnah, but... Shalosh Aratzos L'chazaka. Moshe? Talking about what again? The Mishnah doesn't have quite this formulation. Although you do, yes, it does come up, and the Rishonim actually talk about why the din is different by getting. So yes, there is something, but the formulation shalosh aratzos le'ex. So there are two other places, I believe, in Shas. One is the din of biur by shvius, shalosh aratzos le'biur. Then by shvius is that when the produce can no longer be found in the wild, you have to get rid of whatever you've gathered in for your own use out of your house. And the other one is, now I'm blanking, Shalosh Aratzos L'Nisuin. If you get married, it goes like this. If you marry a girl from, if you marry a girl and you live in Jersey, so if you want to move to New York, you need her permission, you need her consent. So that's maybe a little bit overdone, but the idea was that there were three regions, and if you married, if you lived with your wife, you got married on the assumption you live in region X and you wanted to move to region Y, so then you needed to have, you needed her consent. Without her consent, then you weren't allowed to do so. She was you either had to divorce her per ksuba, or you had to not go. So this seems to be this general division, this geographical division, which has many different ramifications. In our Mishnah, it happens to be somewhat more balabatish. It's a metzias type of issue. So the three aratzos with respect to Chazaka, Yehuda, Evar Yarden, and Galil. Okay, now what's the din? What is the nafgamina? Go ahead. Okay, so this is very interesting. One of the questions that we're going to have, that the Gemara is going to grapple with in more than one sugya, is going to be the question of Chazaka shelo b'fanav or macha shelo b'fanav. In other words, what if I, you know, obviously the way you want to take somebody else's land or possessions is to wait till they're not around and to squat. That would be the obvious way to do it, because if you want to try to gain cheska shalasham in my house, it's probably not a good idea when I'm living there to try to do so. It's not going to be very effective. However, what happens if I'm away? Well, then doesn't that sort of undermine the purpose of Cheska Shalashanim? Because how am I going to know that somebody's living in my house that I would actually lodge a protest and say, what are you doing in my house? So the Mishnah sounds as if in order to get a Chazaka, it sounds like it has to be Chazaka Befanav. It has to be in the same location he has to be Machzik Befnei, the supposed Bailam. That's what it sounds like. And therefore, if you're in one area, I'm in a different area, that doesn't count. Now, of course, that's a little odd because it really shouldn't be dependent upon what region you're in. It should be whether or not you're there or not. So, arguably, the Mishnah really might be saying that news travels only so far. And if you're in Yehuda, news is only going to travel around Yehuda. And if you're in Galil, it's only going to travel around Galil, and so on and so forth. Okay, so that's an issue that we'll have to deal with. So according to the Chachamim, then a person has 3 years. Chazaka must have 3 years in order to be proof, despite the fact that you're in the same region as somebody. So I presume that even though the person may have heard within 3 years, he has up until 3 years to lodge a protest. What does Rabbi Yehuda say?
Some Rabbi Yehuda argues, "Lo am Rishol Shanim Elikadeshe Be'Asvamia." V'yachzik shana. Yachlu v'yodi'uhu shana. V'yabilu shana acher.
Okay.
Even if, it's not even if it's just the Medina next door, but the whole point was that even if the guy's far away, you know, across an ocean or something.
Well, I don't think it was quite across an ocean.
A river.
Well, probably across their ocean. They do know about the ocean. They do know about the Okinus, but this, for them, the Yam HaGadol is the Mediterranean. Aspamya, I didn't have a chance. It's usually translated as Spain. I assume that that's correct, because it was, and it wasn't the farthest reach of the Roman Empire was probably England. Is that correct, Ari?
Or Spain.
Well, I mean, England is probably at least geographically farther. By the time Chazal already was. But it means about as far as the civilized, the inhabited world that they knew of.
I think Spain was considered farther.
What's that?
I think Spain was considered the end of the world.
Well, England, I think, is actually considered the end of the world. The world, England, the word means, like, it means end of the land.
I know in medieval times, though, like the Pillars of Hercules, which is Spain and the north coast of Africa, well, that was like the...
I understand where that's coming from. So either way, in this case it's a distance issue. It's very far away. Assumption is you could travel within a year. I would imagine that the voyage from Eretz Yisrael to Spain should take less than a year, actually. But that's enough time for the word to get there, to get anywhere in the world. you have enough time for the guy to be there for a period of time where it's apparent that he's squatting on the land or sitting on the land, enough time then for the news to travel, enough time for you to come back. Now, the implication of the Mishnah, which I'm not going to elaborate on now because the Gemara has a discussion about it, but what is the Mishnah? What would the Mishnah imply for Rabbi Yehuda in terms of Macha? Do you have to go up to the guy and say, what are you doing on my land? Or can I call out, you know, can I complain to Moe and eventually, through telephone, it works its way, it's across the room, and hopefully Bitzal hears that, you know, I don't want him on my land. So what does the Mishnah sound like?
It has to be
Mechah. It has to be Befanav, right? Mechah has to be Befanav, and that's why you have to come back a year. So the Gemara, that's a big, big issue in the Gemara. Okay, fine. Now, the Tosefta actually comes and sort of spells out something very explicitly. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, go ahead.
Amar Rabbi Yehuda lo amru shalosh shanim el b'deshei v'asvamya.
So that is really a piska from the Mishnah. Right? Up until there is just a quotation from the Mishnah. It's what we call the Dibur Maschil. Now, what does the Tosefta add? Imhaya.
Maybe it's, you know, just leaving out the other part of the Mishnah and Amachad could be even shalob b'fanah.
Given the Tosefta doesn't argue explicitly on the Mishnah, and if one part is quoted verbatim, there's no reason to assume it's anything otherwise, other than just being the lemma. Okay. This is, by the way, this is very common in the Tosefta, where it'll quote part of the Mishnah, and then it will simply elaborate and comment on it. Okay, so in other words, if the person acts like the Bailim, and Tosefta says Shana Achas, but we assume it could be even less than a Shana, if the person acts for a long enough period that demonstrates Bailus, and you're there and you say nothing, that's an implicit Hodah that the Karka, that the person's claim, in fact, is a valid claim. Simcha? No, I think that because the Mishnah uses the term Peros, okay? Now, it's even for a Beis Chabad. For the Beis Chabad, it's not the oil that's coming out of the Beis Chabad, it's the usage of the Beis Chabad. It's the usufruct. So that's why, because they use Peros, they use the term Achila, I think. Okay.
Don't you think Achila is more like a... You're not the Baal on a field and you're just suddenly start pinging out the field. It's supposed to working. I don't know. It's not...
You are correct. There are stages of working that the Gemara says wouldn't be a chazaka because the person's happy for you to work the field for him. But I think that this could be said for even for things that are not achila. Achila means the usage that only Bailim do. Let's say it that way. And so it could be actually eating, it could be other things. Now, as a Beis Chabad, it's not going to be literally achila. It's going to be using the stones.
If you're working in a guy's field, you're allowed to eat his...
Yeah, okay, good. Parashas HaShavuot, you yotze with that. Something at the end, a couple of things. But Michael?
I may have missed this, but doesn't it seem that the Mishnah and the Tosefta are arguing on each other with regard to Rabbi Yehuda's view?
Why do you say that?
Because from the Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Rosh Hashanah, Melech Yeshayah, Vaspam, Yachzik Shana, Yelchub Yodiyu Shana, Vayabal Shana Acher, That's why the original 3 years was instituted, and therefore, once it was instituted, though, it's instituted for all cases, even if they're in the same place. But Tosefta seems to make a point in saying that if they're in the same place, though,
it's a sharp reading, but it's not compelling. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda offers Rabbi Yehuda's lo amre el shalashanim is a response to the Tanakhama, right? He says you got it all wrong. And in fact, I would argue adarabba. In other words, if you want to read the Mishnah that way, what is the machlokas lemaisa between Rabbi Yehuda and Tanakhama? See, if you read the two, what's that?
Yeah, I was thinking of just explanation.
No. You can't. How are you going to say that? The Tanakhama doesn't offer a reason. Tanakhama offers a din. Rabbi Huda, when he says lo amru, it means your din implies a certain reason, and that's the wrong reason. Now, why would you assume that he would agree with the din, but then come up with this reason? You're seeing them totally disjoint. In other words, there are two statements that were put together in the Mishnah and they're not connected to each other at all.
No, not that they're not connected to each other, but the Rabbi Yehuda would be simply explaining the where the...
Again, if you read the Mishnah as one naturally composed unit, there's a machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda.
It does say Amar Rabbi Yehuda.
I'm aware of that, but that may be. I'm just trying to think. That's an interesting question. But I think that, again, unless you assume that these are two statements that were just glued together, which really weren't, you know, one was not a response. If Rabbi Yehuda is a response to the first part of the Mishnah, if his comments are made in light of what's said in the first half of the Mishnah, I think you have to say there's a machlokas. If you're going to argue that the editors of the Mishnah sort of just put them together because they related to the same thing, so Rabbi Yehuda's statement is a strange, lo amru shalo shanam ela kadei she baspamya, still sounds like he's arguing on something. If he wasn't responding to something, Rabbi Yehuda, shalo shanam kidei she he baspamya. When you say lo amru ela, it means it sounds if somebody presented another view, Rabbi Yehuda's arguing on that. Emmanuel?
You know, even according to Michael, there still would be a difference according to them in cases outside of Medina when there's a different Medina. He would think that Shalosh Shanim is sufficient for Chazaka, and they would disagree.
And yet he would say that even if you happen to be in the same Medina, he's still only 3 years. Okay, I hear. Fair enough.
I'm saying that I agree with that reading. I'm just saying that.
I hear. I'm a Kabbal. So I think, let's put it this way. I'm not interested in trying to force agreement between the Tosefta and the Mishnah, but I don't really see a clear reason to assume there's disagreement. It's possible. Simcha?
So what's the disagreement between Rabbi Yehuda and Tanakhama?
According to the way I would like to read?
Yeah.
Rabbi Yehuda says that the Shalosh Shanim is only in a situation where at least it's plausible that the Baal HaSada didn't hear about it. But if we have a context which we know it's done befun of, he's in the same Medina and he knows about it, then even one Shana, one usage is enough.
And the Tanakhama
says no. It says you have 3 years. Which now brings us to that. Now we're going to get to what's going to be one of the first issues that preoccupies us, which is what is the we've touched upon a little bit, what's the reason behind the Shalosh Shanim of Chazaka? So Rabbi Huda would be fairly obvious, which is your silence indicates that
acquiescence
is an admission that it doesn't belong to you. It doesn't belong to you. I want to avoid acquiescence. Acquiescence might be translated Hebrew as mechila, which is going to come up, but it's going to be rejected. The question is, what is the svar of the Tanakhama? That's really what's interesting. Emmanuel, you're going to... Ari, do you have something to say, or... His hand was up before.
Are you reading the Tosefta where he says if you're there for 1 year, that's a chazaka? Is that literally 1 year?
I don't think so. I think it means
just the lack of protest.
Lack of protest over something that merits it. So shana achas means, in other words, when we generally acquire shalosh shanim, let's say by estei beis habaal, it means three payor cycles, three usages. So whatever constitutes a usage. Where someone should protest, yeah. And as I think that if you look at the way that we shown him, or maybe the Gemara formulates it, it's almost as if la'altar, have chazaka.
So then what's a chazaka? What's a chazaka then? It's just nobody's protesting it.
Chazaka means, even if it's for 3 years, the fact that it's for 3 years, for the Tanakhama, let's go a step to the Tanakhama. The way the Gemara is going to explain it, but open to other possibilities, and the Gemara is going to struggle, if there's more than one perush in the Gemara, is it's a combination of his silence combined with the fact that the person, I mean, clearly the elephant in the room is the fact that the second guy has no proof that he bought the land. He doesn't have the shtar. Right? In other words, if he had a shtar, that would end the entire discussion. What do you mean? It's, yes, it was your land, and here it is, I bought it from you. So on the one hand, you have the absence of a shtar. On the other hand, the other guy doesn't say anything. So just because he doesn't have the shtar doesn't mean that you didn't buy the land. Maybe you lost the shtar. So the 3 years seems to be some type of balancing act. And again, I'm adding in the shtar. I don't think the shtar is explicit anywhere. Even if it's obvious, I don't know if it's explicit anywhere in the Mishnah, and I'm not even sure, even in the Tosefta, shtars do come up, but it's not clear. It's never stated as, nowhere is the absence of the shtar seen as the driving force explicitly behind the Cheska Shal Shana, but it may be obvious. In other words, it may be so obvious that there's no reason to assume otherwise. Just because the Bavli explains the Mishnah a certain way doesn't mean that the Mishnah has to be read that way. But just because the Bavli explains the Mishnah a certain way doesn't mean that can in fact be the Pshat in the Mishnah. So yes, the Bavli introduces Ad Shalosh Shanim Yisdarin Shbishtari, but that may be so obvious in the Mishnah. Simcha? I'm sorry, Manuel and Simcha. Presumably, yes. He would disagree on both ends. He might agree with the Tanakhama anyway. Which Tanakhama? What the Einam Yom Liyom is, I don't know. He might say that everything is Shalosh Einam Yom Liyom. I can't see him agreeing, based upon his logic, agreeing with Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yishmael on the one hand. On the other hand, he's also more, I can't call it Mekel or Machmir, but he would also say that if you're there, you don't even need 14, 18 months. You don't need 3 years. 1 year or one usage is enough.
Right.
So, it cuts both ways. He's both more Machmir in terms of the time requirement, more Mekel. Simcha?
I was going to say, is it possible that the whole definition of meaning, both Tanakhama and Rishon all work with the assumption that this goes by the squatter, whereas most of Yehudu seems to change the focus to the owner, the original owner? And it's, I don't like the idea of it at all, but it is the idea of, once you squat long enough, it is yours.
No, but how does that... But then you're going to have to... But what do you do with Mishnah Gimel?
You have to have a claim to ownership. It's regardless. You have to have a reason why you're on the field.
No, but the point is squatting is not enough. It has to be that...
I'm not saying that squatting somehow automatically reverts into the owner of...
So I understand. What I think you're saying, I don't want to explore it now, but I think is one of the trickiest... Look, the biggest issue, what you're saying is really the following. What is the key? Is the key that he doesn't have the shtar? Or is the key that the guy didn't protest? That's really what, in other words, that I think is one of the essential conceptual questions to be answered. And I think it's going to be a big machlokas are we shown him exactly how to balance that. Let me sort of throw out an afgamino. What would happen if 3 years went by in a scenario in which you could prove that he actually never heard about the field, and that's why he wasn't mocha? Would it matter or not? Right? In other words, if it's a case by definition, so that's the way the takana was made. You have to hold on to your shtar. The question is, what would be if we could verify that you didn't hear the guy was machzik in your land? But that's an essential question, and that could be. See, I don't want to say that's the machlokes within the chachamim, because even within the chachamim, it's not clear what the essential piece is. But that in a nutshell, that's the big question. Okay. Fine. Yes, Ari.
Is it possible?
Agreed, except it's provocative. But the point is, according to Tanakhama, why? In other words,
no, according to Yehuda, it's just a function of time. Meaning, how long does it take before people? How long does it take for you to become the Baal of a
Oh, that's
property?
What you.
Whereas Tanakhama would say that unless you're in the same medina as the Sadeh, unless the owner and the Machzik are in the same area, there's no point of the Chazaka doesn't even get off the ground.
Except that even Rabbi Yehuda is moda that it's related to the lack of macha, because if he's hayyim b'dina, even shana achas is a Chazaka. Why?
But it's
the answer is because he didn't protest.
Yeah, but it's not the point of the Chazaka is only to see how long it takes for the Baal to get upset that someone's on his land. It's just a matter of setting a time limit within which someone can say, so someone can lodge a competing claim.
Well, and almost, but if I wanted to reformulate your words into Bavli's words, up until that point, he has to explain why he doesn't have a shtar. After that, he just lost the shtar, and that's why the time, it's why it's 3 years. That's really the direction you're going in effect.
Well, no, having nothing to do with the mahzik.
So what's the magic of 3 years? Okay. You know, I don't need to solve this problem right now. We're going to deal with the Gemara on this. I just wanted, you've sort of figured out already what the questions and the issues are, and eventually we will deal with it. It may be a long eventuality, but we'll get there. Emmanuel?
Also, just relating to what you were talking about, and also to what Michael's talking about, just in general, there would be a difference saying that 3 years for some reason constitutes a type of proof of ownership, and saying that 3 years is a legally instituted cutoff. For after that, we say that it's his. It has nothing to do with proof anymore. It's not, it proves that it's his. It's just because
But it doesn't. It's not true because kol chazaka sheinim taina chazaka. It's not automatic.
No, my point is just that it's not about proof, really. It's not really about proof anymore. We don't care if the other guy, right? After 3 years, since they got, it's a matter of convenience because after 3 years, people don't hold their star. It has nothing to do with. I mean, I could just say that the guy was crazy. He should hold on to his star. It's not a proof after 3 years. It's just that it's a matter of convenience. It's a legal convenience. They instituted something that makes things more convenient for people.
Okay.
You don't throw out your star after 3 years. It's that after 3 years, you assume that most people don't keep their star.
So therefore, you make a legal. My point is, therefore, you make this idea.
Okay. So let's. We will revisit the issue. Mishnah Gimel. Continue, Ben.
Kol chazaka she'ein imataina ein chazaka. Keitzar amar lo ma ata oseh b'toch shali. Ve'omer lo shel.
Nobody ever said anything to me. Mishnah says? Fine. Why? That's very nice. Okay, that's nice. Nobody ever said anything to you, but it's not your land, so it's mine. And I am the Marakama. I have proof. Generally remember that to usurp the guy who's sitting on the land within or after 3 years, whether he doesn't have a taina, you need to have proof that you're the Marakama. You have to prove either with Aiden that you were living there before or shtar, or the previous shtar, that you have the latest dated shtar. Once you have that, so then the guy needs shaloshanim and a taina. Okay, go ahead.
If a guy is on his edim that he lived there for 1 day before this guy was there, or edim that he.
I'm not sure about that. Usually, it's shtar is the way we usually. They say shtar, they do say edim also. So, how long he had to live before, I don't know, but probably it doesn't really matter. In other words, it might even be 1 day. And if he's the person who could be previously established as acting as an owner, and no one else lays a claim against that, like there's no person beyond him who says, hey, you were squatting on my land, so it may not even require more than a yom. In other contexts, we only require a day. Now, there's a bane when the Mishnah is going to say in a moment, Vabami Shemi Rusha in a Tzarech Taina. But the Gemara says, as long as he can establish his father lived on that land for 1 day, like the Bailim, then, and it may be more than Yom Echad, it has to be something that demonstrates Bailos, then his 3 years, that constitutes a Taina, and the 3 years constitutes a Chazaka. So it could be that 1 year is the same thing here.
Well, the Rambam in the Pirshei Mishnah says something like, Edom that it was Yedua Lo. So I was just wondering what that means.
So I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he would say that one day or one minimal unit of usage is enough. Would he say that if there's no shtar, you require 3 years? I tend to doubt 3 years, but because 3 years is only is to explain something else.
So are you saying only the Baal can lodge a macha?
You mean can someone lodge a macha on behalf of the Baal?
Like a security guard,
That's a technical din. I'll tell you what, this depends upon, this is a Metzias question, and I don't think the Gemara addresses this at all in the Perek. This is a Metzias question, depending upon whether a person takes the Macha seriously or not. The Gemara is going to have a discussion as to what is the formulation of macha. What does the person have to say in order to constitute a macha? If the person says, Ploni Gazlanahu, the Gemara says it's not a macha. You have to say, Ploni Gazlanahu, because he's sitting in my field or this particular field. The Gemara's details, the Rambam seems to have a different gears in the Gemara or something like that. But there has to be, there's a substance or a technical definition as to what must constitute, what constitutes a macha. The reason for that is because if you just have a generic statement, Gazlanahu, so that's nice, okay, he's a Gazlan. Okay, so I say, when I say so-and-so is an idiot, right? You can be an idiot for many different reasons. Human beings have created many, many reasons, and many very creative in that regard. So how do I know whether the person really is a total idiot or just he did something silly? If I tell him he's an idiot because, you know, he stood on the roof in the middle of a hurricane, so that gives you an idea of what you're dealing with. So it really depends upon a metzias, a psychological metzias, when someone else comes forward and says, hey, what are you doing on his land? In other words, you say, who's this clown? Not his land, what he's the goody two-shoes, he speaks to everybody. Does he take that macha seriously, that there's going to be an error? Or does he say, this guy's crazy, he's got his own agenda? So the Gemara doesn't address it, but I think it depends upon that issue.
But why does it depend on what the...
Because the assumption is, when someone makes a macha, then for me to lose the shtar indicates, really, normally... Again, we have a problem. We have a problem that I'm claiming to live on this field. I've been living on this field, but I don't have a shtar. Why not? So the answer is because at a certain point in time, I just take it for granted that nobody's going to challenge this, and I'm not careful about my shtar. But if I know that somebody's challenging it, then, you know, I have to be smart and realize I better hold on to my documentation. But what if it's not really a challenge? What if it's some clown just, you know, so that's, in other words, it could be, it might very well be that constitutes a macha, but it sort of depends upon, it's a metzias question, psychological question. And would we say that since you heard that somebody said it was somebody else's land, you should hold on to it? Maybe you could say the following. It's nice that Reuven said that it's Shimon's land, but Shimon didn't say anything, so why should I expect that Shimon's going to come to me and say, give me my land back? Because Reuven's mishigas. Shimon knows he sold the field to me. Reuven doesn't know that Shimon sold the field to me. Right, so
you're saying people, the idea we have that people will lose a shtar for 3 years is because they know they have a chazaka?
No, it's because they don't assume after that point anybody's going to make a that the Bainim are going to make a fuss, that the Marakam is going to make a fuss, because they think, presumably they bought the land legitimately, and the Bainim haven't complained. And a long time has gone by, and you assume that any potential Irurim have passed.
But so then maybe when Rabbi Yehuda said that the macha needs a year to travel back to the guy, it's not because he thinks that macha shlo b'fanav doesn't work, but he's saying that even if it's shlo b'fanav, that you have to give the guy, it has to be within 3 years that the news will get back to him.
No, yes, you're right. He certainly assumes, because you have to allow the possibility it takes time. But he doesn't say that. He says, you have to go. He says, you go. You hear.
V'yilchu v'yidu shana.
You know, that's the chazaka gets to his ears. Then,
oh,
the Yovel Lashana Harris. Yeah.
Right. Well.
Okay. So now, so finish.
Also, only the Baal can be the Macha.
What's that?
Seems like according to Rabbi Yehuda, only the Baal can be, you know, protest.
Yeah, but again, the question is that only. One could say that, no, the reason why it's not that the Baal has to go, he has to just make sure that somebody protests. Now, you could argue by definition that means he has to go and do it, because how else is he going to know if he's not there? Okay, you might be right on that. Fine, the Mishnah continues. Okay, now, let's continue. So, now in the Tosefta, there are a few cases that are very important. I do want to try not to get bogged down in them, because each one of these issues is going to receive a discussion, almost all, well, maybe not the first one as much, is going to receive a discussion, a fair amount of discussion in the Gemara. Just one point of vocabulary here, I'm sure most of you figured out, the word ono is the Greek word for shtar. As a general rule, any word in Mishnah, any word in Tanaitic Hebrew that ends in on or os with a samach, or it's got lots of samachs and tesses in it, you can probably almost take it to the bank that it's Greek. Okay? So an own apparently is a... I assume own is the word, actually, although I think Lieberman says oh no, which is weird.
Like from I own the field?
Okay.
So
Lieberman says it's the Greek word for shtar. What's that?
Onus. You have, this is your onus.
That may come from the original word. Okay. So anyway, so it's just a fancy word for shtar. Okay, so you can impress somebody on a date and ask them if they know what the Greek word for shtar is. But other than that, just know that it's the same thing. So now the Mishnah says.
Okay.
What's that?
Do you recommend that?
It depends on the girl, actually. So, all right. Okay, so this is not technically really, it has relevance to Chazaka on some level, but this is not about a Cheska Shalashanim even immediately. Rather, it's about a situation where somebody sells a field to me. So the Gemara has the following case. I say, a person comes to me and says, let's take a case. Avi comes to me and says, Rebbe, you're on my field. And I say, no, I bought it from Emmanuel. So Avi says, yeah, but Emmanuel's a thief. So the din in the Gemara is going to be that if I can establish Emmanuel was in the field for one day, for one unit, one day, usage as the bailim, then I have a taina. Now, it doesn't prove that Emmanuel didn't steal the field, but I don't have to prove Emmanuel didn't steal the field. I just have to prove that I have a taina, I have a basis on which I'm coming claiming ownership to the land. If Avi can prove that Emmanuel, in fact, stole the field, I'm going to lose it. And then I have to go to Emmanuel and say, now you owe me the money that I paid you for the field. But the point is, it's enough to establish a taina. Without that one day of proof, so Avi just walks away and says, that's very nice, you deal with Emmanuel, give me my field back because he's a Gazlan and you have no proof that he ever lived in it. I'm the last Marakama on the field, and you didn't pay me any money. You admit you didn't pay me any money. I didn't. I said I gave it to Emmanuel, and therefore the field belongs to Avi. That's the...
How does he prove that Emmanuel's a thief?
How does he prove that? The Edom come along and show that around that time he physically threw Avi off the field and put a fence around it and started living in it as Avi was screaming, thief, thief, thief.
If Avi wasn't home and Emmanuel squatted there for one day...
And so one usage, remember, not one day,
one usage.
Then it's not, that doesn't prove that Emmanuel didn't steal the field, but it's enough to be a taina.
Right, but now the original owner can never prove that he didn't sell it to Emmanuel because Emmanuel's off somewhere else and Emmanuel doesn't...
Well, sure he could if the original owner, you know, for that period of time, that day, that week, that he wasn't there, you know, had Adam with him or Adam where he was and he could never have communicated with Emmanuel. How could Emmanuel possibly have bought the field? Right, they didn't have telephones back then. You know, ways you can make, once you have a telephone, you can figure out a way to make a kinyan. Maybe you can, not so. But anyway, okay. So now, in this case, but here's a case simply where even if Emmanuel says I stole the field, Emmanuel sells me the field, and then he says I stole it from Avi. So the din is Emmanuel believed? The answer, you could have fun here. You could say Miman of Shach. This is that old paradox, right? Two Edom come and say we saw the new moon. Two bar mitzvah boys who are going to turn bar mitzvah with the new moon come and say, you couldn't if you were with us. But if you believe them, then they're not bar mitzvah, so they can't testify. Okay, it's the old. Why should you believe Emmanuel if he's telling the truth? He's a Gazlan. So, you know, why would you believe him that he stole the field? But bottom line is, this is a general principle. Some of you learned Gittin last year. So what's the din? What's the din if you write a Sefer Torah and then you sell it to somebody, you come and say, Sefer Torah shekasavti askar shabo, I wrote them shalom l'shma. What's the din? What did Rav Huna, I think, tell him? Neman atal hafsid tzcharchav i'ata neman, you know, l'sol Sefer Torah. Your neman, because hodas ba'din k'vei din nami, that you have to refund the money for the Torah, but the Torah is still kasher. Why? Because you don't have nemanus on somebody else's object. That's no longer biyadcha. So if I stole in possession of the field, then I say I stole this from Ploni, then it's hodah, I have to give it back. But once I sold it to somebody, I don't have nemanus on that field anymore. Okay? So the answer is, it's a kind of pagin on dibur. The real answer is to that, is that we believe you that it's not yours. We don't pay any attention in terms of pasdin, fredis, or the like, that you stole it. As we believe the sad is not shalcha. But that's only when it's in your possession. Okay. Fine, so that's the first case here. You're not neman. You no longer have koach over that field. Ha'ochel sadeh.
Sadeh machmar ono. Didn't say ono shehi besua. Areza eno chazak.
Okay, so if in fact you have a shtar to prove that you purchased the land, and it turns out the shtar is invalid. It's invalid because it's mezuyaf. It's invalid, let's say for that reason. So you don't have a chazaka. Why not? Because you don't have a taina. Your taina was I bought the field, and here's the shtar. And now we've demonstrated that the shtar is mezuyaf, it's psula, so therefore you don't have a taina. You've been living on the land, but you don't have any taina. Even if you had shalosh shnei chazaka, it still should be no good. Okay, next, Tosefta Gimel.
Ochel sadeh, b'cheskat shehi shelo.
Okay, so this is, I know this confused some of you, I don't know how many of you. It means I eat the field, okay? And I pull out, the other guy comes and says, what are you doing in my field? I pull out the shtar, I say, here, look, here's the shtar, you sold it to me. Okay. So all you have to do is you bring, now, and this is, I have not had the field for 3 years. Although either way, it might not matter. Once I pull out the shtar and claim this is my basis, if it's a shtar mezuyah, if it's a problem, okay? What's that?
Said you did have it for 3 years.
I don't think it makes a difference whether you had it for 3 years or not. Either way, the din is the same.
The second half of the Mishnah, he said the whole point is that the first half is that even though you've had it for 3 years, you've ruined yourself by saying that.
Correct. So that doesn't make a difference, the din. Fine, I'll accept that. In other words, it's going to be the same thing. Yishtayim shtar b'chosama, except for that I think what he's saying is not correct, actually, because let's say you can't pasul the shtar, but the shtar, you can't be mekayim the shtar either. So the pashtus is, so first, a general background then. Min HaTorah, when you have a shtar that's written, we say that edim achasumim b'shtar nasa kimishin echgray dusam b'bezdin. Okay, this is edus which is accepted b'chsav, and it's final. Midrabanan, however, there is a requirement of kiyum shtaros. Because it's only midrabanan, there are lots of kulas by kiyum shtaros. So if your party, if I pull out a shtar on Mark and I say, you owe me $100, here's the shtar. If he doesn't challenge that, Beis Din will make him pay. If he says the shtar is mezuyif, I have to bring proof, either because even from the Beis Din archive, where you recognize the signatures of the witnesses, or I bring the witnesses themselves, or people who recognize their signatures, Mekayin the shtar, then I collect the money. That's the din of kiyum shtaros. So if the guy comes forward and says that presents this challenge, claims it's my field, and you say you sold it to me, here's the shtar, the guy is entitled to demand, presumably he's claiming that it's invalid, kiyum shtar. And he denies the shtar is valid. You mekayin in the shtar, you keep the field. It doesn't really matter whether or not you had 2 years or 3 years. Either way, the din is going to be the same, right? Now, what's the next step? I was going to say was this, what I was saying to you before was that I would imagine that even if you can't be mekayim, if you pasul the shtar, so then you're right. Then it's chazaka sheni mataina. But what if I just can't be mekayim the shtar? I don't have corresponding evidence. So ordinarily, I couldn't collect with such a shtar. But here, I'm already musak on it. The purpose of the shtar is not for the chazaka. The purpose of the shtar is for the tainis. You haven't undermined my taina. If I said, why is it any worse if I pull out a shtar that we can't find the witnesses for? Not that we passed it. Why is it any worse than that? And if I said, I just lost the shtar, but you sold it to me. But it's not mezuyah for me. That's my point. In other words, if they pasul the shtar, I agree with you. Then even though I had a cheska shalashanim, it undermines the taina. But if it simply was not makuyam because you couldn't find the witnesses,
well,
then the din
says that if you imayim shalakayim ugon shemeso idem moshachol medina seyam beim mishiyakar chosmeim sumchan al irichazaka.
Okay, so exactly. So then the din of the Tosefta is not true according to that. Because if it's shaloshanim, you don't need really yiskayim hashtar b'chosama. What you need is that lo yipasal hashtar. That's really what you need. If it's a cheska, if you already have shaloshanim, if you have shtei shanim, then it's yiskayim hashtar b'chosama. Okay, I don't want to belabor this. Yes. There's no level of evidence required essentially for taina. What's required for Taina is that according to what I say, I am the legitimate owner of the field. If I say, lo amar li adam davar me'olam, that's not a claim of ownership. Right? That's not...
Why do we even need the shtar at all?
You don't need the shtar. The point is, if he had lost the shtar, so this is part of the question whether it's 2 or 3 years, but he had 3 years and he lost the shtar and he says, I bought it from you, that's fine. That's what I'm arguing with Bezalel, that if you already have a cheska shalashanim and now I pull out the shtar, so if the shtar turns out to be potzel, so the previous Tosefta said, well, that was your taina, you didn't need it, but you were being honest, you said this is the basis, and if it turns out this basis is false, so then you've undermined your entire taina. If you simply can't prove the shtar, in other words, let's say because the edim have died. So if I already have a cheska shalashanim, just because I can't prove the edim, it's no worse than if I didn't have a shtar at all. It's not like I'm being somech on a shtar mezuyaf. I'm just I'm claiming that it's a mechira. Here's the shtar. The shtar very well might be.
You might as well not show the shtar to begin with.
Correct. Yes. In other words, there was benefit to him not bringing the shtar in the first place. But I would argue if you have the shtar, that's why it's, I think, better to read the Tosef that's talking about he didn't have 3 years. So he does need the shtar. So he's kind of a shtar b'chosamav. Fine.
Like a middle ground, though, like if the Edom aren't dead and the Edom haven't gone to Nisayam, and they also, you're not able to produce them. Like
Well, what do you mean not able to produce them? If they're alive and they're here, they refuse to come?
I say they're not Medina Siam. They're just somewhere where either they're people no one else has ever heard of, which does that make it possible?
No.
Right, so if it's not signatures that we recognize, it's not a key, you're missing
You're haggling on the details now. At what point does it undermine, does it destroy the star, versus at what point does it just not validate the star? That's not my issue right now. I know, I'm not committed one way or the other. Emmanuel?
Just going back for a second, in the case where you have a star that's Mizuya,
yeah.
Let's say you were on the land for 3 years, and we say that it's not a good because you don't really have a claim. So what's the case? Like, what's happening? You're there for 3 years, and then the guy says that...
You're on my field, and I say, what do you mean? You sold it to me. Here's the star.
Yeah, but let's say you don't have the star.
Then that's a stand. Then all you have is the tiny. You sold it to me, and you would win.
So I want to
highlight for you something. I don't think this... I don't recall this passage being cited in the Gemara, but we are going to learn the following story. The Gemara has on, I don't know, Daf Lamed, Aleph Amid Beis, Lamed Amid Beis, fairly early on, that a guy comes in and says, my boy's, what's the expression? Bahai Ara? And he says, you sold it to me, and here's the shtar. And then he goes over to Rabba and whispers in his ears, it's Mesuyav, but I had a good one, and it got lost. So I forged this one in its stead. The service proof. So there's a whole sugya about that issue. Right now, would he have been better? Now, I don't remember if there's that cheska shalashanim. I don't remember that case. But if he had shalashanim, would he have been better off? So that might be a variant to this. Maybe you don't have shalashanim. Would he have been better off if he kept his mouth shut? Yeah, but the truth came out. It's sort of like Emmanuel, you know a little about Migo?
Yeah.
So Migo b'makom edim is not good. You know why? Amigo just says we should believe that you're telling the truth because if you were going to lie, you would have told a better lie with which you would have won. But if we know you're lying, it doesn't matter that you could have told a better lie. You're a liar, period.
Yeah, but what's going to happen? The other guy's looking through this guy's garbage for like why is someone going to take out a star that they know is Mizuya, right? Because they wrote it.
Because they think they're not going to get caught. That's why.
They could be trusted for being there for 3 years.
Because most criminals, Emmanuel, are stupid. That's why they get caught. The smartest criminal that what's that?
They don't learn lesson.
No, the smartest, yeah, that's true. The smartest criminal that I'm aware of that I've seen, you know, in my lifetime was the Unabomber. But even he was done by his own stupidity and ego, right? If he hadn't insisted on publishing his manifesto, then he would have gotten caught, right? His brother recognized, somehow it rang a bell and it struck a chord in his brother.
Sister-in-law, and that convinced the brother.
I don't remember all the part then, but the bottom line is, most criminals get caught? Because some guy mugs or kills somebody on the subway, wherever else, and he goes back to his buddies and he starts boasting because he's stupid. Because if you're a smart murderer, you keep your mouth shut. And if you're a smart mugger, you keep your mouth shut. But they just can't because they're not smart enough. Right?
Crazy.
Not always crazy. Degenerate, yes. Not necessarily crazy. So that's how most criminals get caught because they're stupid. Even the ones who don't win Darwin Awards, most of them are stupid. There are a few smart ones, but most of them are stupid. Okay? Madoff wasn't a stupid criminal. He was very smart at what he did. Eventually, obviously, in those things, you always get caught, but that's the way it is. Okay, fine. Continue. So now, what happens? So I'm going to explain the way Lieberman explains Tosefta without having to change the Girsa. There is a Gemara in Kuf Nun Daled which quotes a very similar Brisa. It's not identical, but it's the same Brisa. And it's based upon that many want to be Magia Tosefta to Lo Nataltei Maos. But I'm going to just explain the way, not so much, I don't want to get into this, spend a lot of time in this. Now, the guy says as follows. I pull out the shtar. And you know what he says? It's a shtar pistis. The Bavli has shtar pasim. Lieberman says the shtar, it means the following. The purpose of this is to get around a problem of ribis. Here's the problem. I need money. But you don't want to part with your money. You can do good things with it. That's one of the problems with ribis, right? So you want to charge me, but you can't charge me interest. You know, we're going to do the following. You're going to buy my field. And you're going to give me money. Eventually, I'm going to buy the field back. But what happens in the interim? you get to eat the peiros of the field. Now, ordinarily, when you take a mashkon on a loan and you eat the peiros, and then eventually you get all your money back, that's a problem, if not a ribis to the rice, and minimally avak ribis. Minimally. It might even be ribis to the rice, depending on how it's done. But in this case, there's no ribis. Why? Because I bought your field. Okay, eventually you buy back from me. That's your choice. That's not a problem. If a field goes up in value, forget about whatever I do with it. That could also affect things. Doesn't matter. Sale, mecher is not affected by ribis. Halva is where you have ribis. But if I give you money because I'm buying something from you, cannot be any ribis on that. So the problem is, so he claims it's a shtar pistis, which implies that he had the right to repurchase the field. That's effectively what it is. I'm selling my field, but I have a right of repurchase. Okay? There is such a thing, by the way, in halacha, not in this context, but when there's a whole discussion about this, if you are forced to pay debts by if Beis Din sells your land because you haven't paid a debt, and then you manage to cobble the money together, up until what point, or are you at any point allowed to go back to the lokeach and demand your field back and give them the money? It's not a davar pashut. You would think, of course, that once your land has been sold, it's sold and there's nothing to talk about, but that's a whole discussion. So here, and that was the deal we worked out between the two of us. So yes, you have a shtar on this karka, but so that's what Lieberman says. Not lo natal dimos, but it's a shtar pistis. He says, I wrote the shtar for you. It's a legitimate shtar. And it's a legitimate in the sense that it's not it's forged, but it has some condition that's not stated in the shtar. So I kasafti shtar, and I talti the mouse, I took the money from you, and now I'm prepared to give the money back for the field. But I want the land back. Shtar pistisu biyatcha. So Tosefta says, I call it hacharzaka. It's too bad. You don't have proof in the shtar. That it's shtar pistis, that it was a sort of a conditional sale or a right to repurchase. So then you don't have then the guy who's musak on the land, he's allowed to keep it.
Because
of the shtar. Now, one of the very important issues the Gemara discusses is the following. Supposing the question is modeh b'shtar. This is appears in Kuf Nun Daled. It appears, I think, also in Ksubas in the second parak. Modeh b'shtar sheksavo tzarech l'kaim or not. If I am modeh that I wrote a shtar, but I claim there was a tanai attached to it, do you have to be mekayim the shtar or not? Remember, if I tanya the shtar is mizuyaf, you have to be mekayim the shtar in order to collect with it. But what if I admit that I wrote the shtar, I authorized it, but there was a condition attached to it? Another example, shtar amona. Shtar amona is when I write a shtar, I give it to you, that I borrowed money from you, but I actually haven't borrowed the money. I trust you. So shtar amona. So the question is, let's say I'm modeh that I wrote the shtar. Whether or not, modeh b'shtar sheksavo, tzarech l'kayim or not. So Beis Din is not going to accept my tanya, but will Beis Din turn around and say, do we say the following? You, the guy who's holding the shtar, have to prove that the shtar is valid, otherwise you can't collect. You know why? Well, on what basis do we know the shtar is valid? Because I, the one who gave the shtar to you, admit that we wrote the shtar. But I also say at the same time, it's a pesha asar hu a pesha hitir, because I say that the shtar that I wrote for you is really has a condition attached to it, and that condition wasn't fulfilled. So that's a machlokas hatanaim, I believe. It's in Kuf Nun Daled where this price is quoted, and also I think in Ksubas, where the modeh b'shtar sheksavo tzarech l'kayim or not. The simple reading of this price is what? That modeh b'shtar sheksavo ain't tzarech l'kayim. Because as soon as you say shtar pistis hu, what does the Tosefta not say that you have to do? Yiskayim b'chosamav. In other words, if, in the first case, when it's not that I taina that it's a shtar pistis, if you want to remain on this land, yiskayim b'chosamav. In the second part, if I say, kasafti shtar, natalti mos, u'shtar pistis hi, so the karka remains b'cheskas b'alad. Why? But the shtar, where's the kiyum ashtar? The answer is, modeh b'shtar sheksavo, ein tzarech l'kayim. Once I admit that the shtar was, principally speaking, valid, so you don't need kiyum shtaris anymore. Why? Because kiyum shtaris is only a chumr d'rabbanon in the first place. Medina, you shouldn't need any kiyum on a shtar. You need, if anything, you should need a raya to pass on a shtar.
So the way he reads it is that the shtar isn't good anymore, and that's why you're relying back on the chazaka, which is why he reads the ratio also.
No, it's not that there's... No. But that's not what it says. Again, maybe that's why he doesn't. Maybe he amends the earlier part, lo natal timos.
Right,
maybe that's why he comes to it. But if you say this way, there's no reason. Once you say this, so then what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with a guy who's on the land, not for 3 years, but he has a shtar. And as far as we're concerned, the shtar is valid because the bala shtar is modeh that he wrote it.
Yeah, but then, according to the way you're reading it, you have to assume that modeh b'shtar shekasu in tzarech l'kayim. According to what he said,
I think that's what the Gemara says on this, actually. I have to go back and look at it carefully, but I think that's exactly the way I want to read their version of the Braisa, which says more or less this, I think is what they want to read. I could be... Anyway. So he might avoid that issue. Anyway, it's an issue, and it's going to be tied to this price.
It's not the original. Is it not the original Baal who's supposed to be
It is the original Baal. He says, I wrote the shtar. I got money for the field from you. That's how he got his money as the loan. But shtar pistisu. I have the right of repurchase. So the mission. So the sefer says, Hakola hachar chazaka.
And you think it is or is not a response to the...
It is a response. It's a response to Vahotzi alav shtar shemacharalo v'shinit alav mamatana. It's a response to the first case, really, shemacharalo, right? Natalti maos. Yes, Moe.
Is there any difference whether it's before or whether it's after the mahzik pulls out the shtar that the original owner says it's pistis, or if, let's say, he comes before and says, get off my land because the time of repurchase has come? I know that you're going to pull the star, but it's demanding.
I don't think it makes a difference. I don't think it makes a difference. Because fundamentally speaking, it's not because we think the guy is lying, but in order to prove something, in other words, once you have a shtar, which is, again, mekuyam, because he was moda, the burden of proof is upon him to prove that it's a shtar pistis, and that doesn't really matter whether he was smart enough to offer the taina first or later. Right. If it were a question of purely nemonis, do we think he's lying or not, yes, he's less likely to be lying when he already anticipates the whole thing, but I don't think it's dependent upon that.
But peshas or peshet, or in general, when tatum come later, isn't there some rule that your original taina of peshas or goes away because you knew like
probably
come or something?
I don't know if they have. I'm not aware of a case. Roy Adam Mamash Mashinu Bayan is going to come up Moda B'Knas. I'm not aware of it coming up there. But theoretically, it might be. Tzvi?
You mentioned earlier that if the Kiyum Ashtar does not actually happen, there's a reason Adam or elsewhere, that it's just less if he didn't take up Ashtar in the first place.
I think that should be the din. So if he has Shalashanim, then it should work.
Why then is the Septus terminology?
Because I'm assuming, in fact, that it's not a cheska shalashanim. He's there a couple of years. And then the guy says, my boy is payara, and he says, here's the shtar that you wrote for me. Because if he was there for two, then if he fails to be mekayim the shtar, he's got to give the land back. If he was there for three, and he simply fails to be mekayim the shtar, not that it's mezuyaf.
Okay, so those, right? those two details build upon each other.
Yeah.
They
support them. Tosefta Dalaban.
Ochas the Sheshanim, the Irala Shaloshanim Harishonot, Vahrona Omer Lo Ata Machartali, Atanatatali Matana, Imach Matana Rishona, Ena Chazaka, Shakultana Shemitzata Betela Kula Betela.
Okay, so the Tosefta here is very. Gemara, again, I don't remember if the Gemara actually quotes this, but one of the Amorayim protested that somebody was on his land, and then he wanted to protest again the next year. Now, he hadn't bothered to actually extract the land, but he wanted to leave his machal line, and the Amorayim that he gathered together said, you don't need to, once you moche, it's sufficient, but it sounds like you have to moche every, from the Gemara, you have to moche every 3 years. Right? Because otherwise, the guy could say that after that machal you made, you then subsequently sold it to me. So if I was on somebody's land for 2 years, and he was moche, and now 3 years go by, so I have, and he says nothing, I would have a cheska shalashanim. But so if I can't keep my mouth shut because I have to offer taina, but what happens here, there are two possibilities. I could say you sold it to me 5 years ago, or I could say that you sold it to me 3 years ago after your macha. If I say that you sold it to me 3 years ago after your macha, so that's a taina. If I say that you sold it to me 5 years ago, that's not a taina. Because I already knew that had been a macha lodged, and if that was what I was relying upon, then I should have kept my shtar even beyond, beyond forever, really. Because we don't accept that taina.
There's no migo.
No, why is there? Of course, there's no migo. Why is there no migo? Okay. We're having a debate about, I'm going to give you a simple example, but then you'll realize why in this case. Forget the example. The reason why, the answer is we believe you. We believe you that your claim is that you bought it 5 years ago, and since that's not a valid claim, because you had no proof of that, you had no shtar, you had no proof at the time, so basically we believe that you're living on this land based upon a taina, based upon a purchase 5 years ago that, as far as we're concerned, never happened. It's the best way of putting it. Yes, he could have taina that he subsequently bought it, and that would have been a valid taina. But that's not true. No, that's not what happened. And if we believe him, I hear what you're saying. In other words, we rejected that taina 3 years ago, in effect. It was thrown out the window. He had no ability to claim, no right to claim that he bought it 2 years before that. Right? He had no shtar, and the taina wasn't, he had no taina then. So therefore, the only valid taina could be something that he purchased it post the maha. That's the best way of putting it. So in effect, we believe him. We don't believe him fully. We believe that he's on the karka, that his taina is based upon a purchase 5 years ago. And there was no purchase. There's no evidence of purchase 5 years ago, and we don't accept the taina because there was a maha against it. Alex.
Does the maha last for 3 years or covers 3 years? Meaning in the second year, if you protest.
It lasts memela for 3 years because if you don't protest, if you let more than 3 years elapse, so then now you have a period in which you could say, I bought it after the last maha.
Let's say you protest in the second year. Does that cover the first year and then the year that follows? Or it's gonna
no, it covers 3 years from the time of the maha. You're really looking forward. You must lodge the maha within 3 years, but it covers you 3 years forward.
Right.
Why does it cover you just reset?
Right.
Correct. Only
right.
covers
right.
you for 3 years.
Right, right.
That's all, and not more. Okay. Continue. So that's the point of the Tosefta, is that imach mechamas taina harishona, if your claim is based upon the original claim of originally having bought it, so then ena chazaka shekol taina shemitzase betela kula betela. In other words, we don't accept that taina wouldn't have worked for the first two, for your ownership of the first 2 years. It doesn't work for anything further than that. Simcha. You can use kesef and regular.
You could do that. So going back to what we said earlier, between the two different, is it about maha or is it about an excuse for not having a shtar? I really don't think it's about excuse for not having a shtar, but there seems to be tons of other ways to purchase the land, which probably were even more likely.
No, actually not. And I don't remember where I saw this. I don't know if it's in the Rishonim somewhere in the Perek, where there's a discussion. What if a person claims, not avad shtari, but he claims I never had a shtar? Oh. I don't remember where. I know what the logic is. So the response. There are those who say it's an invalid chazaka, and as I bought it with another means. And the reason for that is it's a migo. It's an anan sadi that he's not telling the truth, because people almost never bought land without a deed. It's almost unheard of. I don't think it's in the Gemara. I think it's in the. I'm pretty sure it's not in the Gemara, but that's what the Rishonim say. I suspect it was true, by the way. It's a really. Because if you buy it without, what's that? Yeah, well, I mean, you see that, that's going to be the opening sugya, actually, or one of the two approaches, attempted initial approaches. The bottom line is that's the way people did things, because someone, you could have a marakama, even think about the way things are done today. The only thing, there's only land, to only two things have title to them that I'm aware of in this society as a rule. Land and cars. Right? It's an interesting, and I think cars have title, there's probably more than one reason why. But land, traditionally, is always, you always have title to land. So it's highly unusual to do it without a shtar. Let me formulate you this way. There are two kinds of shtars you can have on karka. What are the two kinds of shtars you can have? A shtar raya and a shtar kinyan. I suspect that many times you may not have, the kinyan may not have been bishtar, but you had a shtar raya regardless. You could have one shtar that functions as both. You might have, and in fact, the Gemara in Kiddushin says that the practice was, even if you made a chazaka, you weren't kona the karka, I think, until you paid the kesef or something. That was a very common practice, or some places at least had that, but as a shtar for raya, at least, almost certainly that was standard. Okay. Mishnah continues. Fine. Now, what's that? So you do. The Gemara says you do need a taina. You don't need raya. You do need. He has to have at least a raya that his father lived on that field for a short period of time, enough to constitute some bias. He doesn't need shalosh anim, and then he has a taina. Does that prove that his father was the owner that legitimately? No. But the purpose of taina is not proof. What is the proof that you're the owner of this field? Cheska shalosh anim. But a chazaka is not a chazaka without a taina.
So that's worse, because then you need some sort of proof. While the other tainas, you just need to say something?
No, the other taina, the problem is, in the case, if my father, in fact, the Mishnah will say later, or the Gemara says, a gazlan doesn't have chazaka. So if someone is the child of a gazlan, and someone, a Marakama, comes forward and said, your father stole that field from me, Cheska Shaloshanim doesn't help. Right? In other words, there's no chazaka because you can't have a taina. Because we assume that he was a gazlan. And that's why he had the field. So again, it's not. In other words, if I bought the field from you, I can say, you know, machartali. But if I don't, but in the case of the ba mechmachs yerusha, so it's only basically my father bequeathed me the field. Well, was it your father's? So assuming his father's not a gazlan, we don't require proof it was the father's. We require at least some raglayim ledavar, in order for it to be a taina.
So you do need a taina.
Eino tzarach taina. He doesn't need his own taina. If the father were alive, the father would have to, and he was relying upon Cheska Shal Shalom, he'd have to say Machartali. The Bami Shemusha doesn't require a taina that he bought the field, or that he knows about the purchase of the field. He can come and say, I inherited the field. All he needs is a riot, not for the purchase of the field, but the riot that at least it was his father's on some level, on a minimal level. Something which for his father would not have been a basis for claiming the land.
So if he's telling that it was his father's, and can't provide any proof. How is it any worse than saying that, you know?
By the way, I don't know if he has to prove. I don't know if the child has to say that has to prove that the father ate it for Yom Echad. It may be enough for him to say, I saw him eat it for Yom Echad. I'm not sure.
Then that's a taina, though. That's just a regular
taina. No, because when I say I bought it from you, lefi dvarai, it's impossible the field is stolen. When I say that my father bequeathed it to me, and I saw him eat from the produce one day, Lafid Varai, I could still be not the rightful owner.
Well, your shtar could be puzzled when you say I bought it. There could be ways,
No. But if I am telling the truth, when I have a shtar normally, you might be able to puzzle my shtar, but if I have a shtar and I claim you sold it to me and there's the shtar, Lafid Varai, if you believe what I am saying, I am the rightful owner of the field. If you believe what the Bain is saying here, he's not necessarily the rightful owner of the field. He says, I got it from my father, that's true. He's saying my father used it for a day. That's true. But his father could still have stolen the field and then used it for a day and bequeathed it to him.
Right, but...
And it's not his field. But nonetheless, we still say it belongs to the Bain. Even though Lafi Dvar, it might not be his.
But in the other case of Lafi Dvar, when he says, I got it as a present.
From you. Not it fell into my lap. You gave it to me as a present. Lafi Dvar, it's Vaday mine. Lafi Dvar, Bain, it's not Vaday his. That's the difference. That's why he's not. That's why it's called. You're right on one level. He needs to have a mixas taina, but it's not a real taina. A real taina is if what you say is true, then you win. That doesn't mean there aren't ways of undermining that. In this case, even if what the Bain says is true, it doesn't mean by right he should win. He does. That's why we say that Abam Mishim Yusha ain't Sarach taina. Avi? Well, we do. In other words, if we have, in order for this whole discussion to get off the ground, there's a marakama. There's somebody who has proof that he was a prior owner of the field. So normally, the normal case, but you could make intermediate stages, is that the person on the field claims to have purchased from that person. Now, is that person the rightful owner? Well, do we go back to him? He purchased it. We don't, unless there's a claimant otherwise, we just accept that. In other words, if we have, you know, different shtaros, if we have a guy with the shtar and nobody before him claims the field, we assume he is the marakama, if he's being ma'ara on the field. That's enough. Right? Yes, if Reuven claims, what are you doing in my field? And here's my shtar that I bought it from Yisachar. And Yisachar now steps forward and said, Reuven, you stole it from me. That's an invalid shtar. Of course we would go back further, but we don't know reason to. Right? Reuven is the one who is known as the Marakama. He has a chazaka in that sense, not the cheska shalashanim. And now he's trying to reclaim the field from someone he claims stole it from him, or was not did not legally and legitimately acquire it. Okay. Now the Mishnah continues. And this goes back to the issue of macha'a, or whether you expect the macha'a. Go ahead. Right. In other words, in Uman, now this is interesting because what are we dealing with in Uman here? Karka or metaltalin? Pashtus is metaltalin. The Rambam actually ends up having both. Right? If you're a builder, in other words, you come some places, okay, this building took less than 3 years. Okay? I'm almost certain it took less than 3 years. Yeah. But let's say, okay, go to Avas Torah in Englewood, okay? So I think that's been going on a while, right? So now, let's say the builder comes along and says, this is my land, I've been building on it for 3 years and nobody said anything. That would be the Uman. So the builder doesn't have a chazaka because he's a builder. Everybody knows he's a builder. So why would Rabbi Golden protest? You know, you wouldn't expect that.
What does everybody knows mean? What extent is that?
It means the guy drives up every day in a truck that says, so and so builders.
Or if he comes and says, I'm not a builder, then we have to bring Adam that he's a builder?
We might, okay. Yes. So and at some point he can leave the building business. And if he leaves the building business, he's no longer Numan.
So can he ever have a chazaka?
Yeah, what if he's on the role of the builder when he finishes
his... You mean a chazaka on karka? He better keep his shtar. He better keep his shtar. He knows there's an Uman. What?
What about a tailor? How can he ever buy a suit?
One second. So hold on. In order for someone to have a tain against the Numan, they have to have proof that they were the prior owner. Right? In other words, one of the important stipulations by an Uman that the Rav already quotes from the Gemara is that the only time this is true, and this is more by metal, that's not relevant by karka, is it has to be that it has to be Adam that the object, remember today everything is most things are mass produced. So this suit, you could probably somewhere in the world, you know, there are 100 other exact same suits as this, right? Because we mass produce things. Once upon a time, no two suits were exactly the same. I mean, some may look similar, but there was no mass production. So almost every object in some way was unique, okay? So it's concealed that Adam could say, this was his object. We saw him wearing this suit for days and days and days. So the only time that there's no chazaka for an Uman is if the Uman is standing there and we see the suit, or Adam just saw the suit in the Uman's possession. If not, the Uman has amigo. The Uman can say, has the amigo of saying, you never gave it me a suit in the first place, or I gave it back to you. But when we see the Uman is holding the suit, when neither of those is an option, and the only question is, did the Uman buy the suit from me, or is he repairing the suit from me? So the Uman knows that if he wants to buy the suit from me, he has to have Adam. He has to have a shtar and a suit if you could have such a thing. In other words, when you're an Uman, in some context, you have to be more careful about establishing title to the things that you work on. An Uman, if I'm a tailor, I can have chazaka on pots, right? I just can't have a chazaka on somebody's suit. That's all. Yes? Somebody answer that question. La'alter. By metaltalim, possession is 9/10 of the law. Right? A chazaka for sure, and metaltalim is la'alter. The chazaka is that anybody thing that's tachas yada shel adam is harei shelo, and so if we reason to doubt that. So in this case, by an uman, you have to have edim that it really was somebody else's, at least before this. Okay. So, uman, and aris, uman could be on, maybe could be on karka as well. A shutaf is a partner. Again, I don't want to go deal with all the pratim now. Arisin is a sharecropper. Apitropin is a guardian. And there's your O's and Tesses, and that's another Greek word, an epitropos. Okay, ein lahem chazaka, because there's no reason to be mocha, right? In other words, my aris is the sharecropper. You know, under certain arrangements, he might take the produce for several years running, and other years he's going to give me a larger portion. It's nothing out of the usual. Shutaf, why should I be mocha and someone using our thing that's ours b'shutfus? What's the big deal? Okay, what else? Ein le'ish... Because either one is often mochel to the other, the usage. So the usage doesn't prove anything. Okay. This is certainly true. Lo bein benichse av. I'm not really sure about la benichse bein. I'm not sure with my kids it's that way, but okay, fine. All right. Now the Tosefta Hay actually starts out dealing with a completely different issue, but it's here derech agav, which is the din of shvua. It's not even. What's that? It's in the seventh parak in Shavuos that there are people who are nishva and shalo b'taina, that I can come without a definite claim and make you take a shvua. It's a shvua samishna, it's a shvua d'rabbanan. I mean, every shvua, once you take it, is a shvua d'raisef. You lie, you violated losisa or losi shavu b'shmila shaker, whatever it is. But the chiyuv to take, when we talk about it with shuas deraisa, we're talking about whether the chiyuv to take the shu in the first place. So there are certain shuas in the Mishnah. One of them is nishban shel b'taina. Even if I don't know that you have my money, but I suspect you, so then in certain cases you can be mashbiya somebody. Now I can't walk up to Jesse and say, I think that you stole $20 from my wallet, so please swear to me that you don't. There's no basis. That's not someone who's nishba shel b'taina. If someone was my business partner when I was splitting up the partnership, or someone was my aris, and I think that maybe he kept a little too much of the crop for himself, or these various things, so then there's a din, eilu nishbayin shelo b'tayna, it's takana de rabbanon. Okay, so the Mishnah says, what is the limit, up until what point? And the answer is only while you're still in partnership, only while you're still in aris. The same thing is true for chazaka. So read very quickly, Ben. So, kozman she'aris. As long as he is an aris, but yatzeh me arisuso harayu kachaladam shutof.
Shutof kolz manche shutof yatzeh me shufuto harayu keechad mikoladam.
Okay, epitropos.
Kolz manche epitropos yatzeh me epitropos ado harayu keechad mikoladam.
And then by the others, and this is not shayach. The first everything until now could be also shvus. And as the first line was, eizel emasayim aris nishba shlo b'tayna. So the first case is technically about Shavuos, but it applies to here as well. The next two cases you don't know, but it applies to both. This applies not to Shavuos Dafka, it applies only to Chazakas. Habein. Okay. Fine. In other words, once if the marriage split up, then one can get a chazaka in the properties of the other. Then you don't remain silent when your former spouse is occupying your land. I think a bain shechalak means he went off on his own. He's no longer. In other words, the assumption is that when the bain is part of the bias, he uses his father's stuff, no big deal. If he's sort of gone off and struck off on his own, and he has no financial connections to the parent, the father, so then he's a separate entity.
Now, does that mean in both ways or only one way?
Both ways.
Like,
both ways. Both ways. Both ways. It's not like Baba Machteres. Even though, as I said before, I would tend to think it should be like Baba Machteres. Okay. So it's probably Mekablei Pikdonos, Varoim Vasachir, and Lem Chazaka, because, you expect them to be having these things and it's not their own. They're employed to watch these things, to take care of these things. That's why they have no Chazaka. Ha'umanim. So the Mishnah said that. Now, Ketzad. Now the Tosefta is going to elaborate. So you sold them to me or gave them to me as a gift. So that's a din in the Mishnah. That's if we see the Uman has the object and we know it belonged to someone previously, he cannot claim to have purchased it without proof. However, and this is the Gemara is going to do some funny things with this, but we're going to explain according to our gears, huh? Where are the objects? Say, if the Uman says you told me to sell them, you told me to give them away. Where's the object now? It's not in the Uman's hands anymore. It's now in somebody else's hands.
What about the money?
So there are two possibilities. Either the Uman says here's the money, or the Uman says I gave you the money already. Right now the focus actually is on title to the object, not on the payment. There are cases where people will agree on the money, but the question is who's entitled to the object. So the Bavli is going to interpret this a little bit differently, but the Pshuto and not so differently, but Pshuto and Tosefta is that once it's in the other person's hand, so it's no longer in the Uman's hand, so the Uman is now Neman, because fundamentally this is like we don't see the object at all. In other words, if we don't see, the way the Bavli explains, if we don't see the object in the Uman's hands, since he's Neman to say, I gave it back to you, or he's Neman to say that Lo Hayu Dvar Meolam, he's also Neman to say, you sold it to me. It's only when he loses that Migo that we say that, okay, we don't believe you, that you say that you bought it. Even though normally, in other words, no Migo. So the only question is, did you buy it or not? So normally, when I'm holding an object, the assumption is it belongs to me. But in this case, because you're an Uman, and it's your thing that you do your craftsmanship on, we don't believe you. Okay? Fine. Next. Chazaka shalashanim, there's probably a couple of words missing in this Tosefta. And it should be Av Shana Achas, Ben Shana Achas, Valkeach Shana. This is important. What the Gemara, ordinarily things would go as follows. If I squat on the, if I'm on the land for a year, and then Yair is on the land for a year, and then Binyamin takes his turn for a year, does the person forfeit their right to the field? And the answer to the question is no. Why? Because the Bamara Kama will say, I never felt the need to protest, because clearly, you were afraid to try to stay there too long because you knew I would protest. So, lo chzakta kidemachazke inshi. You know, you didn't act like an owner, because an owner doesn't abandon the field after 1 year. That's why I didn't feel the need to protest. However, if it's an av and a bain, so then the assumption is the onlooker, what do you mean? It's not that the father was afraid to be master. The father died. So, yeah.
Well, if the father died, then that contradicts the Mishnah. Because
Okay. So you still don't know. We haven't gotten to 3 years yet. Habo Mishum Yerusha means if the Bain was on the field for 3 years, he doesn't need a Taina other than the fact that his father was there a day. Here we're trying to figure out, is the 3 years compoing?
So you still need the Chazaka.
You need 3 years, yeah. If a person was on a Bain was on a field 2 years, and then a guy comes and says, that's mine. He said, I heard it from my father. It's very nice, but you don't have a proof that it was your father's. You don't have cheska shel lashon for him. You don't have cheska shel lashon for you. And therefore, it's mine, and I'm the marakama. The issue would be, let's say the father had 1 year and the bain had 2 years. Does that combine for 3 years? I don't care right now what the Rambam thinks. I just want to know what the Tosefta thinks. What's that? Yes.
But
he's a lokeach. So what the Gemara says on this is that it has to be lokeach b'shtar, and the assumption is that a shtar is a kol. So in other words, if I saw Moi 1 year and then I saw Daniel the second year, and there's no shaychus and they didn't make a public sale, so okay, because he's scared, and you know he's scared after that. But if he sells it b'farhesia and there's a shtar, there's Aden, there's a kol, so then I know that he's acting like he's not afraid. He's selling the field. That's a bigger chutzpah than just sitting on the field. So that's what the Gemara will say, that the bain up to the bain is obvious, but the lokeach has to be lokeach b'shtar. It has a kol, and therefore the years of mitzvah. But if it's 3 years with no tzirif between them, that's not a chazaka.
In terms of being machzik in the land, is selling the land a method of being machzik? Would that be like similar to being mishtamish?
No, it's just simply a way of being mitzvah of two things. But wait, let's look at the next line. Hechzik b'fnei av.
So don't we only give the lokeach, let's say the chazaka, like at the end of the 3 years, because we assume he would lose a star after 3 years, but he just got a star a second ago?
That's a very sharp question. That's a very sharp question. That's very good. I didn't think about that. I would imagine that the Rishonim... That's very good. Yeah, what he said was as follows. If the reason... Can you be mitzaref, a lokeach, and a bain, and an av, three different people, even if the transfer is very public between them, that the other guy can't say, I wasn't mocha because it was, you know, haphazard... But isn't there a problem the fact that the lokeach then keep his shtar for 3 years, right? We said that ad plus shani is darin ish b'shtar.
That only
the
problem
the
original
with the
guy.
Son, not him and the owner all the way before the father.
Well, I'm sorry?
That would only be a problem with him and the son. So the guy says
fine, but that's enough of a question for now to indicate that the focus is more on the silence of the macha, the absence of macha, as opposed to the absence of the shtar.
If he produces the shtar from the guy who sold it to him, he doesn't have any proof from the original seller.
Is that the answer?
What?
Ah, so that might be the answer to the question.
What was it?
He said that you don't. In other words, the shtar that the lokeach does have a shtar. Mm-hmm. The lokeach has the shtar that you expect him to have, which is the shtar that he bought it from the bain. That's all you expect him to have. He assumed the bain was the legitimate owner. The av is dead. The bain doesn't have the shtar minimally because he's not the owner anymore. He threw it out. Even if he had it,
right,
he threw it out. So the apps, the fact, you can't... Why does he need it? He's not even the owner of the field anymore.
The
lokeach has a shtar.
Right.
The shtar that he bought it from
right,
the bain. When I buy a field, I don't get everybody's previous title.
Right, the lokeach has the shtar.
Right.
So he doesn't have a chazakah.
But the problem is that the challenge is, did it really belong to the bain?
Mm-hmm.
The lokeach, we believe he bought it from the bain. The question is, how do we know that it doesn't belong to the marakama anymore? The answer is because the bain owned it. But how do you know the bain owned it? The bain didn't have a cheska shalashanim.
Right.
So he got it from his father. But we don't know what his father has. His father only had it for a year also. So bal karcha, you no longer expect at this point to have the original shtar. The only thing you can work with now is the absence of macha. But it's still a very good point. I suspect that the Rishonim are going to actually use this. Some will use this as a raya for their shita. But okay, good.
How does this go with when we did the second Tosefta, get matmas lokeya. So we said that there is a chazak, or is that completely separate?
That is unrelated to this. This is not over shalosh shanim. That's why I want to say that's even less than 3 years. That has to do with the shtar and taina. This is something completely different. This already is talking about what makes 3 years 3 years. It's totally unrelated.
Because now that we kind of look at them next to each other, the Nimtzis Onoshim
Shiva. No, they're not next to each other, and they're totally unrelated. They're absolutely totally unrelated. They're not. We are now focused just on what does Shalosh Shana mean? Okay. Now, just let me one more line, and we'll stop with this. Hechzik b'fnei Abba, I'll read it. Shana achas b'fnei Abayin shtei shanim, harezo chazaka. B'fnei Av shtei shanim, b'fnei Abayin shana achas, harezo chazaka. Okay, why shouldn't this chazaka be a chazaka? So here you could ask the question, why would the bein, well, I guess he has, even though he doesn't have the shtar, his assumption is that the bein should have been, that somebody should have been mochet. However, b'fnei av shana, b'fnei bein shana, u'b'fnei halokeach shana, harezo chazaka. Right, it sounds a beautiful parallel, there's only one problem. What's the problem? The Bavli asked the question with just a beautiful formulation. If I claim to have bought it from the father wasn't mocha, for a year he died. He was bequeathed to his son. The son wasn't mocha for a year. He sold it. The lokeach wasn't mocha for a year. So what's the problem? The Bavli says, if the bein sold it to somebody else, ein lecha macha gedola mizo. What is the point? The macha is saying, it's my field. What are you doing on it? If the bein goes ahead and his father dies a year later and sells this field which somebody else has been living on, you don't get a bigger macha than that. You can't sell Alex a field that doesn't belong to you. If you sell a field, that's a very public statement of this field belongs to me. That is a macha. So the answer the Gemara ends up giving a little bit of nukimta, and it says, it's a question exactly what it means. I think the Rashbam understands is that he sold all the fields of his father, and the guy paid him a lump sum, and the lokeach just assumed that this was part of it. But the bein never specified exactly, or something, some teretz along the way, so that the bein sale doesn't constitute a macha.
So we said before about the macha needing a specific formulation doesn't extend to this.
Because a macha, it's not that it needs a formulation. A macha has to be in such a way that it should reach the ears of the machzik, so you should realize somebody's tying against this claim on the land. Okay, fine. So we'll stop here. I want to just close with a 2 minute comment on the parashah of Daven. Just for those who are going to class, do you have something for me? I hope so. I hope it's an addition. There is a famous Mishnah in Brachos that states, "Omer al kan sipa yagi rachamecha mishatkin osof." A person gets up and is part of it. Again, today you don't get to do this. When you daven for the yomu now, you recite a fixed formulation. But once it's on time, tefillah is a little more performed on the spot, composed on the spot. Yeah. So impromptu. Yeah. So someone gets up and gives that formulation. We silence him. Why? So the Gemara says that Nesha Osa Midosa Shal Kadosh Baruch Hu Racham Ve'inam Elegzeros. So the Rambam quotes this in the Mishnah Torah. Of course, in the Mar Nevuchim, the Rambam says the reason for the mitzvah Shulech HaKan is because of God's mercy. And the Rambam says, and if you're going to ask me the question, but the Mishnah Bracha says, and you have to quote that in the Mishnah Torah too, but he doesn't mention that fact. So the Rambam says there are two schools of thought on mitzvahs. One school says that mitzvahs are basically just an expression of God's will. There's no reason behind them. And the other assumes that there are reasons behind mitzvahs. And the Mishnah Brachos was according to that, the first Mandamar. And here I'm explaining according to the second Mandamar. The Ramban in this week's parasha attacks the Rambam. And I think in some ways correctly so. But the Ramban makes a very fundamental point about the mitzvah Shiloh HaKan. The mitzvah Shiloh HaKan is not about mercy on the birds. The mitzvah Shiluach HaKan is so that human beings learn to act mercifully. Ramban has a very interesting comment in which he states that it's davar yadua that those who slaughter the large animals tend to be achzarim. They tend to be cruel. That's just one shot. There he offers a pshat that I don't think any of the Rishonim offer on the last Mishnah in Kiddushin, that tov sheba tabachim shutaf o shalam alek. So Rashi there says because he feeds treifas, and when he gets a treif animal, he'll put it in the kosher pile anyway because he wants to save money. The Ramban says no. It's because a person who's engaged constantly killing, even animals, it tends to breed cruelty into a person, especially big animals. When you step on ants, it doesn't have the same psychological effect. But when you're slaughtering large animals and all the blood, it has an impact upon a person. And the point of the mitzvah of Shiloh HaKein is not about mercy, God's mercy on the birds. It's about God's mercy on us, that we should be merciful. And this is something that the Balei Musar, the real Balei Musar, make about human behavior. Emmanuel, that was for you. Which is that I think the first person with this formulation I've seen is the Sefer HaChinuch, that halavavos nimshachas achar apulos. Said if you want to become a kind person, you don't contemplate about kindness. My apologies to the philosophers. You engage in acts of kindness. If you want to become a diligent person, you act diligently. Whatever person wishes to create a certain type of character trait, it's created through habituation. Psychologists can tell you that as well. And it's something that we need to pay more attention to. With Chodesh Elul upon us, Yom Noraim rapidly approaching, building ethical character is really essential as part of the tshuva process and part of the growth process. And in order to accomplish that, we have to both avoid things, even if they're technically justified or permitted, that tend to breed bad habits, and to do those things that breed good habits. It's an interesting comment Reb Chaim I cited, pointing out that there's a sheet in the Gemara, we don't pass in this way, that Gezel Akum is mutter. But Genevas Akum is not mutter. Why? The answer is because Gezel Akum, you do what you do, you're in a sense, you're may not be honest in one sense, but you're straight. Gezel means Bechazka. I woke up to you and I take it away from you. It's mine, or I want it. Geneva is a sneaky act. Geneva breeds a certain kind of sneakiness and trickiness and deceit. And Geneva, even according to the Mandamer, that Gezel Akum would be mutter, Geneva's Akum is also because it does, aside from the what might have been the inherent problem with the action, it also breeds bad characters. I think it's something that we need to think about as we go through Chodesh Elul Yom Noraim, is both to Sur Meira, to make sure to avoid those kinds of actions that even when mutter, breed bad habits and bad character, and to emphasize those things that breed good character of Aseh Tov. Good Shabbos.
Sorry, we will daven in 60 seconds.